From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today, we'll look at the last year in commercial real estate here in Milwaukee and the unexpectedly small impact of the pandemic.
Much of what happened was surprisingly not greatly affected by the COVID-19 pandemic in terms of how it affects development of new buildings.
We'll talk about how our city's environment could permanently change as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. And we check back in with the Lazy Susan chef and owner AJ Dixon to see how shifting her restaurant to carry out only has been working out.
I'm not feeling forced to have to open my doors, which is nice. I'll keep going for as long as I have to. Like, optimistically, we were looking at June. We potentially would be opening our doors to dine in again.
Lake Effect is next, but first, the news. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. Today, we'll learn how Milwaukee and other cities could change after the pandemic. We'll hear poetry created during a time of isolation. A local restaurant owner will talk about business during a pandemic. And we have some tips on caring for your car in cold weather. That's all coming up here on Lake Effect, but first, 2020 was undoubtedly a tumultuous year for most industries. But here in Milwaukee, commercial real estate projects kept chugging along. Although the COVID-19 pandemic delayed some developments, construction continued, with many anticipated to open or break ground in the coming months. As always, journalist Tom Dakin has been keeping an eye on all of it. He joins me now to talk about this last year in Milwaukee commercial real estate. Tom, thank you so much for joining us once again here on Lake Effect.
Thank you for having me, Joy.
How would you summarize 2020 in commercial real estate?
Well, I guess I would summarize it by saying that much of what happened was surprisingly not greatly affected by the COVID-19 pandemic in terms of how it affects development of new buildings. Existing businesses, restaurants and hotels in particular, have been devastated by the COVID-19 pandemic. We all know that nationwide. But in terms of affecting the development of, say, new hotels, it didn't have an immediate effect, mainly because the new hotels that opened in Milwaukee and the Milwaukee area in 2020 were all well under construction before the pandemic hit. So if you're 70%, 80% done, you're not going to stop building. You're going to keep going. Now, of course, they're going to have a rough first year or so because they opened amid the pandemic, but it didn't prevent them from actually opening and being completed.
As you mentioned, there was a lot of stuff that was under construction and set to open in 2020. There were a lot of hotels that people had talked about in light of the DNC, which of course didn't happen here in the same way. And there were other really big projects that in some ways were going to and continue to remake the face of downtown. What are some of those projects that really stand out to you as being notable in 2020?
Right. Well, I think the single biggest one would be the Wisconsin Center expansion. Now, this is our downtown convention center. The plans to expand it were being finalized literally right as the pandemic was hitting. So in April, it got final approval from the Wisconsin Center District Board, and a $420 million convention center expansion is going to occur starting sometime probably in late 2021, later this year. And it is to be completed by roughly spring of 2024. And that will double the space at the convention center. It'll add over 100,000 square feet to the main exhibit hall. And it'll also create a second ballroom with an outdoor terrace, which basically gives the convention center the ability to host two events at the same time, two major events at the same time. So that's a big one.
It's huge news for the city. Of course, it didn't actually start in 2020, but it was confirmed in 2020. It's set to move forward this year. There were a couple projects, though, that did go through 2020 that were worked on throughout the year that are also in about the same area?
Yeah, these are all on the west side of downtown. The people call it the West Town neighborhood. One would be the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra's new performance hall called the Bradley Symphony Center. And this is an $89 million project. This was the conversion of a beautiful former Warner Grand Theater and an adjacent 12-story office building into the new concert hall and administrative offices. That project did proceed. It was well underway when the pandemic hit. The symphony had hoped to have it done to begin its new series this past fall of 2020. Of course, because of the pandemic, MSO and all the other performing arts groups have been forced to not go forward with their normal schedules. And the Bradley Symphony Center, I believe, was to open this month. Now, I think that might be delayed another week or two. So if not in January, certainly probably by early February. And what MSO will do is they will have, I believe, virtual concerts that they'll have their musicians on stage. And if you're a subscriber or if you just want to buy a ticket to a concert, you can watch via the internet. But that, again, is a major project for the west side of downtown. I would add that the former Warner Grand Theater, which was kept in great shape by its former owner, Marcus Corporation, closed in, 1995, I want to say. So this is a big deal. You're taking a major building that's been vacant for 20, 25 years, and you're bringing a lot of new life to it and the surrounding neighborhood.
Well, and just I'm not even sure if it's a block away, maybe half a block away, we have another building that had a lot of vacancy, that had a lot of issues over the past couple decades, certainly. And it's now been transformed into the Avenue. How has that project gone?
Yes, the Avenue, the former Grand Avenue Mall. Well, it's been proceeding pretty well. A lot of the work in creating the Avenue occurred before the pandemic. You had a portion of it, the old Plankinton Arcade portion of it, converted into 52 apartments. Those opened a while ago. And then the attention focused on sort of the newer portion of the Avenue. And in part of that, there were offices created on the upper floors. And about a year ago, Grafe USA, a planning and engineering firm, moved its headquarters into those upper floors. Now, of course, as of March, Grafe, like a lot of, or I would probably say most employers that use office space, shifted their staff to remote locations. But nonetheless, you still have that office portion that's been largely filled up. The final really big component to the Avenue is the food hall, which is known as Third Street Market Hall. And that has had some delays. The construction was underway when the pandemic hit. It was delayed. It resumed, I believe it was August of 2020. And the Third Street Market Hall is now looking at an opening this May. This is all, of course, pending the pandemic. I mean, depending on how you can bring people in safely. And of course, there are restaurants operating at greatly reduced capacity in the city of Milwaukee. So maybe that's an option for them. But that is, again, another project. I mean, in total, the Avenue is about a $70, $72 million project. And that's another one that's gone forward despite the COVID-19 pandemic.
Maybe one of the biggest stories of commercial real estate this year, which has been it seems like it's been a big story for maybe a decade, is the Couture.
Yes, this goes back a ways. I was a younger reporter when I first started covering this. I mean, I was still old, but I was younger. It ran into a lot of delays. I mean, some of those were related to the legality of being able to build on that site. There were questions as to whether it was being built on filled lakebed, which would be a violation of our constitution, state constitution's provision against using public lands for private use. There was a lawsuit. There was actually a piece of state legislation passed and signed by then Governor Scott Walker that set the boundary so it wouldn't be considered part of filled lakebed. Then the developer, Barrett Lowe Visionary, ran into some difficulties obtaining financing. Lo and behold, in 2020, they got that financing assembled. HUD then reconfirmed the loan guarantee late this fall, and the Couture is to have a groundbreaking sometime during the month of January. That'll be a 44-story building. 322 high-end apartments, some restaurant retail space, and of course the street-level transit concourse that'll feature the lakefront loop of the HOP, the downtown streetcar service, which has not been able to run because even though tracks were laid on Michigan and Clybourne Street for that loop route, the connecting portion goes through the Couturist Transit Concourse. So this is a big deal, not just for that private developer, but for completing that portion of the HOP. And this is about a $188 million investment with the building to open probably late summer of 2023.
Right now, it seems like 2021 is promising to be a pretty transformative year for the city of Milwaukee. What are you looking forward to this year?
Well, I mean, a couple of things. Some of these projects that we've just discussed, I would add for downtown, another project to watch is Ascent. This is a 25-story apartment tower, not quite as large as Couture, 259 units, but very interesting because it's using this high-grade timber, sometimes called mass timber, instead of steel and concrete for its frame. And that's an unusual but increasingly popular construction technique, and Ascent would be, if not the tallest, one of the tallest such buildings of the world when it is completed in probably July or late summer of 2022. Construction on that started right towards the end of 2020, and that's an $80 million project. So that's another one to keep your eye on. And when we look at the central city, there are a couple of interesting projects there. One that I'm really fascinated by, and I'm going to be writing about it relatively soon, is called the Community Within the Corridor. For your readers who aren't familiar with it, this is a project that is going to create about 200 apartments, affordable apartments, some commercial space, as well as recreational community space at a former industrial site at roughly 30th and Center Streets in the heart of Milwaukee's central city. Years ago, this was the old Briggs & Stratton industrial complex before it moved those operations out to Wauwatosa. It was then used for decades just for storage. Q. L. Amin, a local developer, teamed up with some of his local partners in a firm out of Minneapolis, Roars Investments, and they have bought those buildings. And they are to complete their financing package very soon. And you should see renovations starting at that complex very soon, probably in the next month or two. And that's a $59 million project, again, for roughly 30th and Center Streets, a neighborhood that badly needs that type of investment, that badly needs a lot of affordable housing, that badly needs jobs. And this is all really, truly good news for that community. Community Within the Corridor, the name of the project, it should open in roughly April of 2022.
All right. Well, I look forward to seeing some of these projects come to fruition. And Tom Dakin, thank you so much for joining us once again here on Lake Effect.
Joy, thank you as always.
Tom Dakin is a reporter who covers commercial real estate for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he's a regular Lake Effect contributor. To learn more about The Avenue or the MSO's Warner Grand Theater, you can find our previous conversations with Dakin about these projects at WUWM.com. The coronavirus pandemic has upended the way we work and interact with colleagues. It's reduced our time together and caused some to reconsider living in overcrowded cities. But as people get vaccinated and when lives in Milwaukee return to a new normal, what will that mean for our environment? Ling Tian Hu is a professor and chair of the Urban Planning Department at UW-Milwaukee. She spoke with Lake Effect's Becca Schimmel about the resiliency of cities and how she thinks our environment will change following the pandemic.
So when you think about how the coronavirus has really upended our day-to-day lives, what are the changes you might want to see to the infrastructure in Milwaukee and beyond?
I expect cities to be very different in their looks and probably in their functions in the future. I believe and everybody expect that working from home or with what we call telework will stay here and like what we do right now. And cities will stay because cities are very resilient. But I want to draw in some of the research that I did pre-pandemic. So before COVID, I did some research on telework. And what we found is that telework does not really reduce travel, which means that people still use the time or the money they saved from not going to work, from not traveling to work. They use that money and they use that time for other types of travel. So they go to visit friends a lot more. They have a lot more social events. They go to do entertainment trips. In other words, telework does not really reduce with going out, and it helps with our work-life balance. So overall, what it means for cities in the future, and all those buildings and neighborhoods will need to be more flexible. And by flexible, I mean probably right now we have a large office building, we have a restaurant, we have a separate retail shop. Probably in the future, the use of the spaces can be transformed very easily. So it could easily be an open office. It could easily be a retail shop or probably a gym or a daycare. So that really depends on the needs, and the cities need to be agile and flexible. So that's what I mean. Cities will look and function very differently in the future.
But you think that cities will remain largely part of the picture and that their resiliency will come through?
Yeah, that's what I expect. And I think during the pandemic, we all realized that how important we need to interact with people, with open spaces. So even right now, we do not travel, we do not social, but we found that actually people use the trails and public parks a lot more than before. That's just the very basic needs for us to interact with the natural environments, to interact with other people. After pandemic, after we can travel safely, our cities are where we live, needs to have a lot of functions to satisfy our social and our needs to interact with people. And that's what I mean, then the cities need to accommodate all these different functions.
So besides that flexibility, what are some of the other changes you think we will see moving forward to our environment?
I talked to some of the architecture faculty in terms of the change of the spaces. What I imagine is that some places are modularized. As I was saying, so these individual modularized spaces could be office building, could be a retail shop. But I was reminded by my architecture friends or colleagues saying, like, transition of spaces are not as easy as I expected. But I imagine some of the technology changes and some of those new building materials, 3D printing and 3D building, and probably some of those 5G technologies can help us to move into that direction. And cities, the functions will stay, so many different types of functions. It's just the form might look slightly different than what we see right now. Probably not so many skyscrapers, gigantic open office buildings, probably very individualized with distinct characteristics for those buildings.
There were a lot of temporary or semi-permanent changes made, including dividers with plexiglass and capacity limits. Do you think those kinds of measures will stick around, or what do you think might happen to them?
I hope not. And from the design perspective, we like the spaces to kind of encourage interaction rather than separating into individual spaces. But one thing I could imagine, and I guess I expect, is that we want a little bit more individualized spaces for workers, even if we sit in a large office buildings. Probably we are not as cramped as right now, and all the companies or all the offices, they try to maximize the usage of the spaces. Probably in the future, there is more space between individual working stations, and we could use that space more individualized rather than have a uniformed function or form.
And do you think that having those individualized spaces might increase people's productivity?
I definitely, and there are so many tech companies going that route. And when we have more luxury, commercial cities like Milwaukee, when we have more options, if workers can work at home and we can take turns, alternate our working schedule, that means we could have more spaces, individual spaces in our companies, in our offices, then there is more chances for us to have larger space where we feel comfortable and we can still interact with coworkers and clients more efficiently.
Is there anything else you're paying attention to or that you think is important to note about the changing needs of our environment due to the pandemic?
I think there are short-term and long-term solutions, and for us, we always look at the long-term change in cities, particularly because the built environment, the buildings and the infrastructure stay here for so long, for hundreds of years. So right now we are adapting like the internal, and we adopt some immediate measures to change our workplaces or to change our home offices. But we need to think in the long run, and we need to think about the long-term trend in terms of public health, in terms of people's well-being, especially mental well-being. And we need to think about technology as well. And we have to combine all those considerations together.
Ling Tianhu is a professor and chair of the Urban Planning Department at UW-Milwaukee. She spoke with Lake Effect's Becca Schimmel about how she expects our built environment to change in light of this pandemic. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll check back in with the owner and chef of Lazy Susan in Milwaukee to see how their model of carryout only has been working. But first, we'll explore a new book of bilingual poetry and hear from the author about how time in isolation helped him create it. That's coming up on Lake Effect here on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. 2020 was especially difficult for artists. Shows were canceled. Collaboration was disrupted. And for many, the year was marked by loss, pain, and isolation. That pain is at the center of Matthew Gutierrez's new bilingual book of poems called Notes I Wrote Along the Way. Gutierrez spoke with WUWM's Angelina Mosher Salazar about the difficulties of creating art for public consumption during such a tumultuous time, and what his aspirations are for other creatives in 2021. He starts by explaining why he chose to include both an English and a Spanish version of each poem.
I'm not the best. I'm not perfect at with my Espanol writing or speaking. I do have struggles. I had just enough to get me through, you know, about a week in Mexico last summer.
I appreciate the candor, Matt.
But
can I say, you know, that really is the experience of a lot of Latinos who live in this country. And it doesn't take away from their Latinidad, but it is an experience of having a proximity to a language, but not being 100% fluent.
Yeah, and I wasn't worried about that, and I'm not worried about that. The purpose was, so, you know, I've spent my years here. I grew up on the south side of Milwaukee, and I work in a bilingual school counselor. And I know a lot of people who can't read English. There were a lot of people I thought about when I first started this, and I said, well, you know, I want them to read it too, and I would like them to enjoy it. I just wanted the people that I know that couldn't exactly read the English version. I wanted them to have a Spanish version so they could enjoy this book too.
What are you hoping people will take away from your book of poems?
I guess it's an insight and a look into the years I spent on this rock called Earth. Maybe some of them connect to them, that they may think, oh, I can relate to that. I think that's definitely what you maybe hope for when you're writing, especially poetry, is you hope people can also relate to what you put out there.
as we're coming off of one of the most isolating years that any of us have ever experienced, you're hoping that your book will be almost a form of solidarity by speaking experiences that maybe other people experienced or it resonates with them.
We can't gather and we can't get together and talk and share these experiences. So maybe, you know, we can connect through words, through literature. I think that's what every written piece of work has in common, is that people can relate to it, can see themselves in it, no matter what it is.
As you look back on 2020 and, you know, the tumultuous year that it was, but it was also a monumental year for you because you reached this milestone in your career where you actually published your book of poems and now the world can engage with it and consume it. Do you have any predictions for this year, for 2021, or even just any hopes and aspirations?
You know, I just hope that people that were working on things and being creative this past year have kept working on it. Or I think we're all hoping 2021 is a lot better than 2020. But there's some good things, some hard lessons, you know, like maybe some of us need to look at ourselves in the mirror and look at our reflection and realize what we're doing and where we're going. If you were writing or creating or painting or something, some of this slowdown time is probably giving you more time to actually work on that. I wrote some things while I was in lockdown because the only thing I could do was go from the couch or the bed to sit at the table and write something, which was a good thing. It's a positive. There's a lot of good things that happened in 2020. Maybe hopefully we all reflected on who we are as individuals, and we can make those changes in 2021, right? I mean, I know I did.
There are so many beautiful poems in here, but I just want to talk about this poem, Meeting a Stranger, because we are having a difficult time adjusting to this new way of life. And this poem, Meeting a Stranger, it feels like a poem from another eon, like just a completely different era of life, of the serendipity of meeting a stranger, someone you don't know, sitting down, talking with them, engaging with them, probably closer than 6 feet apart, asking them questions about their life. Like, we do not do that anymore. So read us a couple of paragraphs from this poem.
This was written last November, 2019. So we were still in that. And I'm pretty sure I met a stranger or saw a stranger. That's probably, yes, we were still out and still able to have functions. But it's a little bit different. Yeah. So this one is called Meeting a Stranger. Let's talk. Open with what you like and dislike. What brings you joy to your day? And if the sun breaks in your bedroom from the east or the west, say something out loud, what you refuse to tell yourself alone, under the shelter of the darkness in your home. Have you any jokes? Can you make me laugh? Let's discuss your favorite piece of pie and which flavor tea opens your eye. Pretend I am your journal. Lay your worries and troubles upon my pages. Write the words that sadden your heart and bring tears to your big brown eyes. Maybe it would be best if we spoke of cheer, happier times, when your family spent summers by the lake, exchanged holiday hugs, held hands around the table as an elder led prayer. Pick a topic, whatever you please. I long to sit on this bench and listen to the words that make up your mysterious life.
Another poem here that I want to hit on is much more somber. It is a poem that strikes at the heart of loss. The poem is titled Loner and a Ghost, and I'd like you to read this poem to us because looking back on the year 2020, it was a year that was marked by so much loss, like such enormous collective loss. In one day, we lost more people than we did on 9/11. So this is a story about a friend, a real person. You included his birth date and also the day in which he passed. Antonio or Tony Valle. So, yeah, tell us a little bit about this.
It's been quite some time. As you see the date on there, that was 2002. My gosh, I was turned 18. It was the summer day, summer night. He's with a couple of friends. They left a festival. they went to pick up another kid from the city. One of the kids in the car had some recent troubles with some people, I think earlier in the day, and they had finally spotted him at a gas station and just opened fire on this car. So there's about four or five people in the car, and I think he was the only one that was hit. Came from the back trunk area all the way to the front. He was in the passenger seat. Kind of just caught him. I want to say, was it February that we had? I can't even think about the date anymore, with the Miller Coolers. One of the people killed in that was his cousin. His cousin was Jesse by, he was shot in that tragedy. And it kind of just brought it all back, these whole feelings and memories back to the front of your brain, of my brain. You know, I went to the wake. It was the same place. You see the same people. Everybody's just a little older now. You know, seeing even Tony's parents and, you know, siblings, and seeing these cousins. And it was the same people. And it was like, just like, almost like reliving this again. So I'm sure for the family, it was even, you know, worse, right? Having to go through this and live through this again. I think, he is buried next to him. So I just felt like we were just doing this all over again. That's kind of where this one came from, sparked by another tragedy that brought all these old memories back, just thinking about it, you know. So that is the backstory behind that one.
Go ahead when you're ready.
Loner and a ghost. My dear friend, you're a ghost. A welcome memory sitting on the passenger side, a ride that has yet to end. It's been quite some years, yet here we are, a loner and a ghost, still passing through these seasoned city streets. I see your image often, deep in facial lines, twins of a kind, and family members you left behind. Aging has left its mark on my soul and weakened my heart, but you possess a youthful smile. In the eyes of 18 years and full of hope, wide-eyed and ready to take a rebellious bite out of life. A friend, a sunset, car rides through the ambitious night, discussing girls, sex, heartaches, and headaches. Big city streets designed as a playground for young hearts and carefree concerns, living for the moment, the minutes and hours at hand. Headphones and constant conversations, unaware if the words were directed to me or the universe as you negotiated ways to see another day. Rolling the dice on a game of chance, equipped with a deck of unanswered questions, constantly reminded of what was so perfectly pointed out at birth. Play by play, one mysterious morning and unanswered calls. Seeking and searching. Door to door, nothing left to explore. Hospital hallways painted an ominous picture of reality, a dark tragedy. Having to admit that tomorrow may never come, that there will never be another rise of the sun. While years have passed and times have changed, one thing remains deep inside my mind, that long lasting ride. Here we are again, a loner and a ghost.
Matthew Gutierrez is a Milwaukee Public School counselor and the author of Notes I Wrote Along the Way, a bilingual book of poems. In about 10 minutes, we'll have some cold weather car care tips, but first, we'll see how a local restaurant owner has managed doing only carryout during this pandemic.
I honestly think we've gained a lot of new customers, which keeps me really hopeful for when I am able to open the doors again.
That's next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. 2020 changed restaurants. The coronavirus pandemic and safer-at-home orders forced restaurants to pivot operations, which cost revenue in a business that doesn't have big profit margins to begin with. More than 30 Milwaukee-area restaurants have permanently closed during this time. Others have shifted to outdoor dining or reopened with reduced capacity. Lazy Susan in Milwaukee's Bayview neighborhood has chosen to do carryout service only. We last spoke with chef and owner A.J. Dixon last July, after she announced that decision. Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski checked back in with Dixon to see how her new model of operations has been working out.
First off, Happy New Year. How you doing?
We're doing okay. Better than I anticipated, which is good. It's still not great, but we are making ends meet for the most part. Yeah.
Good. And when we last spoke, it was July of 2020, and we talked about your decision to remain a carryout-only restaurant with service Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, pre-order only, one menu item a night. Have you kept the same model, or have you?
We have. We have kept the same model because it works, and it works well for us. I'm only ordering what I need. We're only prepping what we need. We're only spending, you know, exactly what we need money-wise for product to come in, so that way there's not a lot of waste. Trying to stock a whole menu and hoping that people pick and choose and order, you know, enough things. So it's been a lot of strategic planning in terms of, like, you know, cost and workload and things like that. But it's actually been working really well.
Good. So have you felt like you can better plan menus and quantities of food based on the new version of, you know, quote, regular diners or carryouts? Has that model changed? You mentioned a lot of strategic planning. Have you felt like you've been able to do it a little better?
Yeah, it definitely is better. Some days are better than others. Like, some days what we think we're not going to sell a ton of, we end up selling. I could have sold more than what I anticipated, which is kind of a bummer, but it happens. I mean, there is no magic formula to do this. And some days are just, you know, slower than what we anticipated too. So it kind of, you know, goes back and forth. So if we have extra food, we'll, a lot of times I'll put a free meal Friday, and I'll just give it out to the neighborhood if I've got extra stuff laying around, because we're going to be closed until Tuesday, Wednesday. So then that way we're not sitting on product. My staff takes it home. I feed them, you know, things that we can freeze or do whatever with. So it's yeah.
And I know, especially with winter, the option of having meals outside, or, you know, getting people motivated to even just go out and do more things, right? Has the feedback from the community remained supportive, or has it grown more challenging to keep customers coming back or attract new ones as this is our new normal for, you know, a good foreseeable future?
I honestly think we've gained a lot of new customers, which keeps me really hopeful for when I am able to open the doors again. The amount of support that we've had from the community and even outside the direct community, just like as a county, you know, alone, has been great. I have customers that drive from Grafton on a weekly basis to pick up food, which I didn't anticipate happening, and some from Menominee Falls. And it's been really nice. I think that, you know, with winter being here, we did close the actual window, so you don't walk up to a window anymore. We do let people come inside, but we limit it to 4 people at a time. And we stagger it so that there's not, you know, a lot of people picking up at the same time. And that seems to be working really well. We also offer curbside now, which you can prepay and call, and then we'll just run it out to your car. So, and that, those are all things that, you know, changing to the weather, that have helped and made us continue to be as successful as we can be in a pandemic.
At the beginning of this, you mentioned how you have to pick and choose the abundance of safety guidelines out there. So has anything changed for you over time, or have you found something that works a little more efficiently or just best for your establishment?
I don't think we've had to change a whole lot. I mean, obviously, you know, the norm is, you know, we wear masks at work, you know, at all times. We take our temps when we come in, we have a temperature log. If any of my staff is sick in any way, they're not allowed to come to work, and I do pay sick time. That is something that I do now do. Because I know right now it's a matter of, when you're only working X amount of days a week, the thought of, like, missing a day because you're not feeling well, you know, is hard. Because it's like, how do you choose between money and, you know, your health? And I don't want that to be a choice for my staff. I want them to know that if they aren't feeling well and if they are ill, they can stay home and they will be paid for it. There has been some, through like the Families First Coronavirus Relief Act, you are able to, if you pay sick pay, potentially get a little bit of that reimbursed. So we did take advantage of that, which has been helpful. But then I made a decision come the first of the year this year that I am just flat out offering sick pay to all my staff.
When we last spoke in July, a few things you said, you know, we need to do this to survive, you know, talking about carry out only, and that you were, quote, riding the wave, you know, doing it to see how long you can physically do this model until you're forced to physically open again. So do you remain committed to this?
Yeah. I'm not feeling forced to have to open my doors, which is nice. It's I'll keep going for as long as I have to. Like, optimistically, we were looking at, you know, we just had the discussion the other day that by June, I would say, we potentially would be opening our doors to dine in again. But there's a lot of variables that come into that. That's, you know, being vaccinated, the mass public being vaccinated, because I do think that even if we were to open our doors right now, since the majority of the public doesn't feel confidence in coming out, it's not going to do us any good right now. I think that once the vaccine becomes more widely available to people and the more people that are vaccinated, I do think the public would feel more comfortable coming out again. And then I do think then we would probably see a little bit better opportunity in terms of having indoor dining.
So 2020, out of the many things that happened, it was certainly a year that changed restaurants forever. You know, how has your personal perspective of being a chef and a restaurant owner changed through this challenge?
I honestly think this has made me a better chef, believe it or not. There's so many things that I've learned, and even just from being able to just cook one menu a night, your focus level tends to change. And it's not that I never put a lot of effort into everything that I do, but when you just have to make one menu a night, it's just, there's things that you look at and do and techniques that you can sit there and hone in on and skills that you can, you know, work on and make yourself better. And I think that has helped. I feel that I've become a better employer for my staff. Not that I was a bad one, but I just feel that I've grown in terms of like strength, in terms of like an employer and employee values and things like that.
So you mentioned you remain committed. Is that the plan so far? Are there any, you know, what happens next kind of thing for you?
No, we're just going to take it day by day. Right now we are still just going to do takeout only. There is no plan in the near immediate future to open the doors. We talked about it at work and said that even if all of us were vaccinated, say by March, we probably still wouldn't open up, because just because we're vaccinated doesn't mean that the public feels comfortable, you know, going out to eat and dine and things like that. And there still is a huge decline in indoor dining right now in the city. There are some places that are doing fairly well with it, and I'm happy for them, and I wish them all the success. And then there's some places that struggle with it. And I just think that, you know, whatever your choice is, you know, this happens to be mine, that I just think that the general perception right now is people need to be comfortable in order, you know, for things to go back to normal.
Well, congratulations on keeping steady during this hard time, and thank you for telling us a little bit about your work, and continued luck and success for you.
Thank you so much.
AJ Dixon is the chef and owner of Lazy Susan in Milwaukee's Bayview neighborhood. She spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski. At WUWM.com, you can find our first conversation about how she adjusted in the first few months of the pandemic. Between working from home and limited travel, many of us have been driving less. Add in the cold now that winter is here, and it's more important than ever to pay a little extra attention to our cars. Lake Effect's auto contributor Mark Savage spoke with Audrey Nowakowski a few winters back about how to keep vehicles running and in good shape during the cold winter months.
Mark Savage, welcome back to Lake Effect. Thanks for taking a few minutes to talk.
Absolutely.
So in Wisconsin, it's not just cold, it's becoming frigid, and it's something we haven't quite experienced before. And one thing a lot of people are concerned about is transportation, whether they are taking city buses or driving their cars. So just to start, what are some good tips, you know, safety-wise, mechanical-wise, that people should keep in mind with this cold weather?
Well, I guess the first thing is, if you can put your car in a garage, that's a great thing, because it keeps it out of the wind and probably keeps it any, you know, even if it's just a normal non-insulated garage, probably 10 to 15 degrees warmer. So that's the first step. When you start it up, obviously make sure the garage door is open, but, you know, let it run for at least 30 seconds. Let the fluids get mixed around you want the oil to be coating all the parts that it needs to coat so that you don't hurt your engine. And, you know, obviously drive normally after that, or at least according to the conditions. But key thing here is, if you have a newer car, you're going to notice that your check tire light will come on, because as cold weather, especially severe cold weather like we're looking at right now, the air kind of escapes from your tires a little bit, so you're going to lose a pound or two of pressure. I wouldn't worry about it too much unless, you know, you look at your tires and definitely something is a lot lower, then maybe add a little bit too, but don't overinflate, because once it warms up, then the tires that will get some of the air back into them. The warmth will warm it back up and expand the air. Always have a good battery. Those people who have had bad batteries over the last year or so and have not replaced them, this is the time it should have been replaced by. Otherwise, you're going to have trouble starting the car. Because if you can get the battery to fire, really most everything else tends to work after that. You just got to get that little electrical charge in there to get everything fired up. And I think everybody always says, you know, keep liquids topped off and try not to let your gas go below a half a tank and things like that. And I'm sure there's some science behind some of that, but I think it's also just to be a cautionary in case you do get stuck someplace.
Now, for everyone in the city that, say, does have to keep their car parked outside, or when you're at work, you're in an exposed open parking lot, should you take any other precautions, you know, perhaps besides having a shovel in your car and some other things like that? But should we let our cars run a bit longer when it comes to leaving it exposed outdoors for prolonged periods of time before we start driving?
Well, I always think it's good to let it run for a little bit, and you almost have to use your own sense on that. Now there's remote starts. It's nice if you can stand inside and start it and let it go for the minute or two till you get out to it. But I think, you know, you have to watch and see if that heat gauge for the engine heat starts to move a little bit, then you know that things certainly are fine. In severe weather, maybe you're going to let it go for a minute or two before you start driving, but most of the time it just needs to get the fluids moving and not just start it up, throw the car into reverse and get going, because things are still a little bit sticky probably at that point as far as the lubricants that are inside.
Now, would that make a difference? You know, say my car, I got it a couple years ago. It's a newer Nissan Rogue. I'm leaving it outside all day in an open parking lot while I'm working. Does it matter with the fluids and the way precaution should be taken with my car versus someone who is, say, you know, driving an older car that does not have the same engine setups that these newer cars have?
Well, it could be difficult for either one. And why I say that is some of the newer cars, there's so much electronics on them. You never know when maybe the cold weather might affect some of that electronics and therefore make it run differently or make it not want to start because, you know, some little computer chip has blown its brains out because it's a daggone cold. Now, you know, the car makers test all these things and they put them through severe traumas and so forth. But, you know, this is, when it's cold, anything that could be bad could happen is much more likely to happen. So you just want to be careful. And again, don't put extra stress on your car. Try to avoid big bumps when you see them. You don't need to give an extra shock to your shock absorber or springs. Just try and drive a little more carefully. And then if you're parking in a parking lot, one of the things I suggest to folks, if it's possible, is do not park with your nose of your car into the wind, because it tends to, that wind chill that you're feeling, your car is feeling it too. So, you know, park away from the wind if possible, or if there's a building and you can park on one side of it and that protects you a little from the wind, that's a good thing. And I know a lot of people, when it snows and so forth, they raise the windshield wipers so they don't get stuck to the windows. And that's the practical thing, especially if it's snowing. When it's just cold like this, I don't think that matters too much. Maybe carry a rag in your car that you could, you know, maybe a little liquid antifreeze for the windows that you could maybe pour something on if it's already gotten too smeared and it's just not clearing for you, because you want to have good visibility. So that's not a bad thing to have. You know, they always tell you to take a blanket and have things like that in the car. None of that's bad. I don't think it's very practical for most of us, because we just don't think that way. It's like, well, I'm only going 2 miles or 10 miles or whatever. And then, you know, if you got an old car, anything you can do to replace, especially belts or things that are going to get more brittle the colder it gets. So a lot of this is preventive maintenance, and probably we should have been talking about this a week or two ago.
But it's not going to help much.
But at least be aware of that. And that's another thing, is when you start the car, those belts are brittle. And, you know, maybe if you don't put a lot of stress on them right away by going extra fast or backing out right away, then you're going to be fine. And, you know, you just don't want to put a lot of stress on them and break that belt right away. Then you do have problems.
Right. We're kind of past the days of having block heaters or dipstick heaters for our cars. So we just need to be a little more gentle, I suppose.
Right. There's still a few folks, I suppose, that have those. And that would be wonderful to have at this time of the year. But it's not very common. And I guess the other thing I would say is, if you know, people talk about diesel sometimes at this time of the year. And while sometimes they are a little harder to crank over, once you get them running, they are you know, like bulletproof this time of the year. So if you live in a really cold climate, sometimes you leave that diesel run all night. And I know that sounds crazy, but I've known from many of my snowmobiling friends that live up in northern Minnesota and the UP that, you know, you lock the car up at night and leave the thing running so that the thing is guaranteed to, and especially usually trucks, guaranteed to be running in the morning when you get out there and are challenged by these, you know, minus 10 and 20 and 30 degree temperatures.
Does that burn a lot of fuel if you're leaving it run overnight but not necessarily moving?
Well, it obviously burns fuel, but it is not a dramatic amount because it is a diesel and they're very efficient in how they burn the fuel oil anyway. So this is probably not the time of the year that people should be worrying quite as much personally about the environment and their car, because the environment has already tossed you a bad scene by giving you a 20 below temperature or whatever. So, you know, do what it takes to survive and make sure you get to where you need to go or to get indoors and stay safe.
Excellent. Great advice. Well, Mark, thanks very much.
All right. Thanks for talking.
Mark Savage is Lake Effect's auto contributor, and he spoke with Audrey Nowakowski for this segment in 2019. And that is today's Lake Effect. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Joy Powers. If you missed any part of today's show, you can find all of our content as a podcast. Just search for Lake Effect in Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or really wherever you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to hear our favorite interviews, look for Lake Effect Spotlight. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll hear from the first Asian American to serve in the Wisconsin State Legislature. She'll talk about what her election means and what she hopes to accomplish in politics. That's tomorrow at 10 on Lake Effect, here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.